Welcome to Career Tools. This week, part two of Career Tools conceptual overview. We finally finished talking. Folks, this cast answers these questions. What are the principles underlying our Career Tools guidance? Why are these principles important to a successful career? And ultimately, of course, the big one, how do I put this guidance into practice? Folks, we've mentioned a lot, but just in case you hadn't heard it, we have a free app. And we encourage you to download it. And listening to podcasts on the app, we're told, is a much better experience. And it gives you access to a whole lot of the stuff as well, particularly if you're a licensee. You can look at show notes right on the app. There are other features and other resources available to you in the app. Plus, of course, there's Roadmap. If you're a manager and you're thinking about rolling out the Trinity, the absolute best way to do that is to do Roadmap. It does all the thinking for you, and it's free as a part of the app if you're a licensee. And again, the app itself is free. A great way to listen to podcasts. Wendy, in part one, we basically said, I think we said at the start that we're doing something we should have done a long time ago, which is laid out the underpinnings of this. I don't think people understand. I think with everyone else in the world, the career advice they give, the management advice they give, it's just what they think, or it's what they feel, or it's what they think the zeitgeist can tolerate. And it's not principle-driven, or if it's principle-driven, sometimes it's, like, for instance, some of the things people use today are aberrant psychological models, right? You can't offend someone and so on. And so you and I have known each other for a long time, and we think a great deal alike about careers. I've told many people that Wendy's smarter than me about careers. And we thought it'd be good to lay out the underlying principles. And we believe the reason that's important, guys, is if you understand the underlying principles and you come to a situation you've never been before, you can go back to first principles. If all we did were tactical guidance and it wasn't tied together with some underlying heft, some principles, then you wouldn't know what to do in any new situation. And so that's why we're laying all this out now. And so last week we talked about our favorites, results, and relationships, which, by the way, our audience, frequently our management audience who listen to Career Tools, gets wrong because they think, no, Mark, it's results and retention. I said, no.
Well, your career, managers.
Yeah, for career, it's results and relationships. But for managers, how your organization evaluates you is results and retention. Good. So that was the first thing. And it took an entire cast because I talked too much. And now we're going to talk about personal productivity. Personal productivity helps. And then we've got a couple other topics. It's not about the job search. And rewards take care of themselves. Let's see if we can't get this done to scoot things along while freely admitting that I'm the problem. So start with personal productivity helps.
So the reason these three topics about personal productivity and job search and rewards come after results and relationships is they're way less important. But they're the things that people kind of glom onto they think they want to improve their career. So that's why we wanted to cover them.
Yeah, I think it's important, guys. You're thinking to yourself, there are people who believe, if you're wondering why we're talking about these, there are people who believe that the way to have a great career is to be good at job searching and to find your next job and to leapfrog and to jump and to jump up. And then the other thing that their career is for rewards. And we not only have data, but we have guidance, which says, no, that's not the way to conduct a career. And then the other thing that we hear quite frequently is this issue of personal productivity.
So people feel like they're struggling in their career or they're not getting as where they should, or they're stressed out by the fact that they have too much workload and they think, I need to be more productive. But the problem is you can be super productive and working on the wrong things or not building relationships and not have a successful career.
Well, you can. Yeah. I'm sorry, Wendy. I got to start talking again. It's what I get paid to do, as my mother tells me. To me, the classic case of personal productivity, you and I both like getting things done. You're a Toastmasters expert, which helps with your productivity. But look, I see this all the time. I've been going back and forth to Silicon Valley for 30 years, and there is a huge GTD, Getting Things Done, the book by David Allen. If you don't know what we're talking about, come to the website. We review the book. It's a fantastic book. You should definitely read it and apply the principles. That said, The people in Silicon Valley are way into GTD. Some of them are deeply, deeply into it. The more technical you are, the more linear, logical, rational, non-interpersonal, non-emotional, non-drama, non-relational, you're going to be, you'll like GTD. It appeals to my engineering side. Okay. But the reason we want to talk about it, because it does help. Wendy's right. It absolutely does help. However, this issue of personal productivity and results and relationships reminds me of the story of the inebriated guy who is looking for his car keys. And a policeman comes up to him and says, "What are you doing?" And he says, I'm looking for my car keys. And he says, "Okay, did you lose them here?" And he says, "No, I don't know where I lost them." He says, "Why are you looking here?" "Because the light's better." And the point is, I think a lot of people dig into personal productivity because they don't want to go around, they don't want to go to relationships. They don't, they won't. They literally will say, "Well, I'm going to do as good as I can on the things that I want to do. I'm going to leave out what the principles underlying all this stuff matters." I'm telling you guys, you can't do it. My good friend Michael Swinson teaches Stephen Covey stuff, Seven Habits, and he's exceptional at it. He is gifted at it. I've tried to hire him here before. And he often says principles are like gravity, right? And a principle isn't, "I want to spend more time with my family," if at the end of the year you haven't spent more time with your family, right? That's a wish or a dream or goal, but it's not a principle. But principles never change. And results from relationships never change. And so we want you to be good at personal productivity. It's an important component, but it doesn't take away from, if you want to drill down into GTD or other sort of personal productivity stuff, that's great. But don't do it just because you don't want to face up to the fact that you don't have a good network. You don't have good relationships inside and outside your organization. Okay, sorry.
Franklin Covey have a new thing called Five Choices, which I was watching something about today. And number three is, do big rocks, don't sort gravel.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You could be really good at sorting gravel. Yeah. Doesn't do you any good.
Yeah, the big rocks. Yeah, and results, delivering on your goals, and relationships, big rocks, two big rocks.
Yeah. So what happens when people want to be more productive is they think they'll do GTD or they'll do email three times a day or they'll implement OmniFocus and then they wonder why those things aren't helping. And the reason is they help you get more done, but they don't help you get the right things done. And it's way easier to buy a new piece of software or even implement GTD, which isn't that easy to implement.
It's technically not as hard as people think. There's a lot of choices you can make, but it's still relatively easy compared to
analyzing your goals and breaking them down into achievable tasks and monitoring your progress. And at the same time, deciding who you need a relationship with and developing those relationships and staying in touch and being available to help when they need it and all of that stuff.
Yeah. And for your longtime listeners, Control Shift K, Control G. And folks, if you don't know what that is, don't write me an email. I'm blowing a kiss to the longtime listeners who have listened to our cast. And if you haven't, I encourage you to do so, about building a network. Not networking. We don't want you to network, quote unquote. That's schmoozing. We're not in favor of that. We want you to know more people. And not just people that you think you should know, more people generally. And then stay in touch with them. And staying in touch with them and talking to them about things that are important to them is what will help you build relationships. And so you're right. As difficult as OmniFocus, I mean, I use OmniFocus, and I'm probably at level 2 of 5, and I want to be at 5. But you know what I spend time doing? Worrying about the results, the organization, and who I know. But you're right; they're an easy way out.
Yeah. And so any personal productivity effort that you're making needs to be in service of the results that you're being measured on and the relationships that you need. And if GTD helps you with that, it's
outstanding.
Awesome.
It's great. Yeah.
It's great. But don't be sucked into that trap of working on your system and forgetting what the system is supposed to be helping you do, which is results and relationships.
Yeah. By the way, folks, if you don't know, if you're a licensee, you do know this. If you're not, I encourage you to become one. It's $200 a year and gives you access to all the written show notes and a bunch of other things, including our interviewing series and so on. But Wendy just ad-libbed a little bit. We have written out show notes in the form of a white page white paper, for every single show. Our show notes are not just bullet points. They're actually written out, so you could read them as if you were reading a white paper. And the sentence Wendy had written that I liked so much, which she then called an audible on, was, "Don't be sucked into the trap of working on your system and forgetting what the system is supposed to be working on." I got to tell you, that is classic forest for the trees, right? It's so focused on the tree, you miss the forest. You're so focused on your system, you've lost sight of what the system is supposed to be doing to serve you. Yeah, that's really like just a really good sentence. Thank you, Wendy. Okay, next thing. So we want to do that. We want to be better. We want to use OmniFocus maybe, or GTD, or any other software or whatever, or a handwritten system. You can use a handwritten system. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with handwritten. Okay, but good. We want to work on that in service of our own goals, our results, and our relationships. And the second thing we want to talk about is job search, right?
Right. And a lot of the people, when you think about careers or you talk about careers, their instant thought is about interviewing and job search. And how do I change jobs? And how do I go to an interview? And all of that stuff.
Well, here's what I heard. You know, it's interesting that we're doing this because randomly the universe puts things in front of you that are helpful to you. Some of that's the reticular activating system, of course. But when the student is ready, the teacher appears. But I heard something just this week that I think is a great analogy for it's not about the job search. A person said about careers and so on, they said, a lot of people think it's about the bridges and they don't realize it's about the it's about the islands.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh. Now, if you've got great relationships, you'll have a lot more bridges, right? There's no problem there. And if you have a lot better results, there'll be a lot more bridges. But the results and the relationships come from the islands, not from the bridges.
Yes.
All right. Sorry. Yeah. I probably just summarized everything, but.
No, that's okay. Well, I'll do the explanation. So, if you think about it, job change happens for the majority of people between 10 and 20 times in a career. If you think about between 20 and 60, that's 40 years. You know, I guess you could change jobs every 22 years and then have 80. No. Half of that, 20 changes. That's where I got that from. So between 10 and 20 changes in a job. And so
in a year, in a career.
In a career.
A career is 20 to 60. So again, 40 years. Okay. 40 years, I thought the number was high, but now when you do the math, okay. Now, are you counting internal company moves?
I'm counting, any change.
Any job change. Okay.
Yeah. And most people won't change 20 times, but like that's my upper mathematical boundary, right?
Fair enough.
And so even if you achieved that, if that's where you got to, and it takes 3 months each time to change jobs, which is short.
It is.
That's 10% of your working life.
That's
all. The other 90% is the results and the relationships.
Is the island. Is the island you're on before you get on the bridge to get off. Yeah.
And so the other 90% is day to day, week to week, consistent concentration on results and relationships.
Yeah.
And if you don't do the day to day, week to week work, and deliver the results and develop the relationships, it makes the job change harder.
There are less bridges.
Yeah, and much less successful. Or those bridges are a bit rickety, right?
Yeah.
Like if you've got solid results and relationships, it reminds me of that. The computer game with the plumbers, and they had to jump over things. A really old computer game. Mario something?
Yeah. Mario Brothers.
There you go.
Yes.
And he had to jump, right?
Now, this is interesting. You know, I played Mario Brothers, and I know there were icons or pictures of pipes. I think I just learned something, which is that Mario and Luigi were plumbers.
Oh, I could have entirely made it up.
Okay, good. So somebody will write us and say, no, they weren't plumbers, but I see the analogy. Or somebody else will say, yes, everyone knew that. Just like when you play Lara Croft Tomb Raider, she's an archaeologist, right?
Yeah, of course she's
a badass archaeologist, by the way.
But good results and relationships means going over, doing that jump, and is easy rather than falling through the hole.
Yeah. So, and heck, if you do really well on the island you're on, another island will build their own bridge to you and pull you across it at a number you can't say no to. Yeah. Good. Okay.
I mean, just think about going to a job interview and the interviewer asks about your biggest achievement. And you say, well, I got 80% of my targets last year, but, you know, Corona some people were laid off and my industry, and like, you've got this whole long list of excuses. Or I achieved 110% of my target last year. And at the same time, I strive to work with excellent vendor relationships. And by the way, I know Ben in your purchasing department, and he and I have been working really hard on getting win-win relationship, win-win deals for both of us. And I'm really excited at the possibility of working
with him. Wow. That's,
you're like,
I like this guy, whoever is saying this. That is, that's my, that second answer is like,
relationships.
It is. Yeah. Right. So what you're saying is, if you're in a slump, or if you feel like your career isn't going where you want it to, the answer is probably not initially to change jobs. It's to stick to the knitting, work harder on your existing results and on your relationships. As the Navy SEALs would say, to embrace the suck a little bit, to get down in the mud. Look, the people who appear to have a career plan and are progressing and racking up honors, I promise you, they are not thinking about their next move all the time. They will say that they're thinking about the next move, but they know that next move is absolutely predicated on the work they do on their island, worrying about delivering results and knowing enough people that more opportunities will present themselves to them. And if they don't worry about results and relationships, all the bridges they hope for won't be there, and they'll crash into a brick wall eventually. Hi, folks. Real quick about our license changes coming up on June 30th. We're basically making all of the changes that we made last year to take care of everybody during the pandemic. We're making those changes permanent. Things like the interviewing series and first job fundamentals. Those things will all be included standard as a part of your license. If you got a license in the last year, and many of you did, actually as a way of supporting us based on the emails I got, virtually all the stuff you have, I think the only thing that comes out of it is effective relationships, will continue. And you don't have to do a thing come June 30th. If you're not a licensee and you were to sign up this week, for instance, those things would continue past June 30th as well. If you want to wait until after June 30th, that's fine. And the price is not going up. And I think our tagline for this rollout is more value than ever. We continue to believe that if we invest in you, we'll create a good relationship with you, and we can help you have a better career, be a better professional, a better manager, better executive, and we'd like to think a better citizen too. Thanks all. Okay, last point, and I love this point because we say this all the time. I mean, we try to make a point about the managers and the listen to the podcast, the Manager Tools podcast, about if you're doing this for money, you missed the memo. This is not, I mean, it ain't a raise. So our last point, rewards take care of themselves.
So don't chase the money, as they say. Because there's no need, and besides, it often ends up in misery. If you've read any memoir about working on Wall Street, like, the analysts are paid multiple six-figure numbers a year, and they start work before dawn, and they finish near midnight. And, you know, 90% of investment bankers, anecdotally, don't last more than 2 years because the pace is just so punishing. And, you know, sure, they get, you know, however much they get, millions maybe, for a couple of years, but you can't do it for more than that because you're just a shell of a human being.
And look, if money is a badge for you, okay, then you're always going to want more. We would suggest to you that you spend some time in reflection and rethink that. But if it's not a badge, it's a sign. In other words, I am at this level. Or worse, it's, you know, you want to have more things. I would suggest there's a simple way to have more things. And that is the Micawber principle, which is named after Wilkins Micawber, who's a famous character by Charles Dickens in David Copperfield, in which he says, despite the fact that he's in debtor's prison, or it was very close to being anyway, he said, annual income, £20. Annual expenditure, £20, 6 shillings. Result, misery. Annual income, £20. Guys, by the way, this is Britain and it's 200 years ago. Annual income, £20. Annual expenditure, £19.06. Result, happiness. The key is not money. The key is spending. It's not income. It's cost. That's what CEOs will tell you. Yeah, we have to grow the top line, but dude, the real way to get to the bottom line, the way to get to the bottom line is cut out costs. And as Peter Drucker says, you don't control costs, you cut them. If you want more money, you can have more money now. Get rid of spending on things that don't give you anything. And it is amazing. And I suspect, we're recording this in March of 2021, I suspect that many of you, if you've listened to all of our casts, and we've done a lot, we try to do the best we possibly can, providing free resources during COVID and during the layoffs and during the difficult times and worrying about your company and so on, you've discovered how much you can cut and how there's no, you know, you could probably cut 20% of your expenses right now, except there are some people for this is not true. You could cut 20% expenses now and there would be no appreciable change in your lifestyle that you would be aware of. I mean, heck, if you have a Starbucks coffee every day, that would add up. Be thousands of dollars a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sorry. All right. Sorry. I interrupted again. My apologies.
That's all right. So a different example, other people will tell you that they take a job for an extra $10,000 a year and it's a longer commute or it's not such an interesting project or product. And because the extra $10,000 sounded like a lot.
Yeah.
And then it's not worth it because, you know, they're away from home too much or it's just not interesting work. And of course, there is a threshold below which money is a constant worry and
rightfully
you
could
do so. With more,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
But one of the things we learn with age and wisdom is money doesn't buy you happiness.
Yeah, once you get over the threshold, yes, yes.
It doesn't matter anymore. Happiness comes from doing a job that we think is worthwhile with as much, you know, effort and gusto and willing and joy as we can.
Yeah, I would actually say, I like the quote, I think I invented it, which is, I've been rich and I've been poor and happy is better. Happiness is not related to income. Happiness is a choice you make internally. And for some people, it's harder than others. We know that. We know about brain chemistry more than we did 50 years ago when I was a kid. And people who had brain chemistry issues were diminished and not respected and so on. We know better today. But for the vast majority of you listening, that is not your problem. If your problem is around money, it's because you're spending too much. And if you want to be happy, you can choose to be happy irrespective of your spending. You really can. Happiness is an inside job. It's a choice you make about how you respond to the world. It's why the word responsibility is a portmanteau of ability and response. It's your ability to choose your own response. The world happens, and then you choose what to take in. And there's a lot of satisfaction to be gained in seeing a pile of data entry work that you have to do dwindle throughout your day, even if another pile appears to it next. And maybe for you, you're a little bit competitive, and so you want your pile dwindling faster than the person next to you. You don't mean for them to be in trouble. You just think, that's kind of exciting. It gets me excited. I'm not going to take that break, or I'll take a little shorter break, and I'm going to get back to it. Because a lot of people think of breaks as, now I'm going to go have fun. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe if you have to take a break, because that's where fun is you're in the wrong job. But when you're in the job, rather than thinking about the bridge off your island, think about the island. Think about the results you're going to have to produce and figure out a way to make that as interesting as you possibly can. And that might include talking to your boss about what exactly your job is.
One of the most fun jobs I ever had was in a bank operating what they called a bova machine. Basically,
Hold on. Wendy, I'm sorry. You've been in Texas for a while. And so you think of yourself probably as somewhat of a Texan, but you're still British. I love you. But I think you said a bother machine, B-O-T-H-E-R?
No, B-O-V for Victor, E-R.
Bother.
Bother machine. It was bank something, something, something.
Ah, okay.
It was an acronym.
Yeah, acronym.
Yeah. And basically all the checks that were paid into the bank, because this is 400 years ago, all the checks that were paid into the bank would be brought up to where I was and stacked. And they put the stack in the left-hand side of this machine, and it fed one check at a time in front of me, and I had to type the amount that the check was for, and then it would then read the routing number and then send it to there were like six different places it could go to on the other side, and it made this amazing clacking noise. It was so good.
It was a paper handling device. They all make noise.
But you could go as fast as you wanted, but you had to be accurate.
Yeah, you couldn't mess up.
It was so much. Yeah, I loved like, bring me a big stack.
I bet you 80% of the people, 90% of the people listening, that was good.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, see? Yeah. And so then, folks, when you put up your nose at all these jobs, you're okay. The problem may not be the job, because there's somebody who'd love to do that job. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you should learn how to love that job. Bloom where you're planted, so to speak.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we said this, but there is an amount of which clearly concerns about money and keeping a roof over your head and food over your table is a concern. And we're not saying that every decision should be made without considering money at all. What we're saying is chase it. If you work hard and get results and develop relationships, the money will come.
Yeah. Tell them the story about the person that we know that was interviewing.
So he was interviewing, and he was asked what his salary expectation was, because he had had quite a senior role and he'd been laid off, and now this was a more junior role. It seemed like risky. He was going backwards in his career.
And I got to tell you, there's some risk there. There's some risk in the mind of the company. There's some risk in that person, like I'm going to price myself out of the market. And it's unfortunate, because it's stupid that this happens. It's inefficient on both sides of the aisle, but it happens all the time. So
the HR woman said, what's your salary expectation? And he said, I don't care about money. And she was just like, well, everybody cares about money, so what's your number? She was turned off by it, aggravated.
That's sad. That's really sad. That's cynical.
But what he meant was, he had had this senior role. They'd saved money. They'd always spent less than they earned. He felt comfortable. And what he really meant was, I'm really excited about the product that you're developing and the contribution I can make. I'm excited about getting, it was a hospital thing. So he was excited about going back into ORs and directly working with doctors with this product and helping people get better. And that was what was important to him. He was like, whatever salary they're going to pay, it'll be fine.
I want an offer for this role, and I'm sure it'll be a fair amount for the value. Here's the way I've told people to handle that. If you don't know what they're offering and you truly can get past the money thing, not everybody can. What you can say is, I don't have a number. I'm sorry, I don't. I know everybody else does, but I don't. I'm not even sure I know the range, but I can guess at the range. And there is no amount of money that you would offer me inside that range that I would turn down on the basis of salary. And you know where I got that? From a couple of recruiters talking to him for a couple hours, some HR managers, like, what if we said this? What if we said this? And then I said that once, and they said, oh, that's good. I said, I'm not. If the range is 60 to 80 and you offer me 40, you know what, dude? That's on you. And I'm going to tell you no. Or when I find out, I'm going to say, I will never trust you again. You took advantage of my honesty. And you basically said, your company is the kind of place that if we can cheat somebody out of $20,000, we will. And that's not a place I want to be. On the other hand, I just take the question out of discussion. The problem is, so many people are afraid that if the range of the job is 60 to 80, that they're going to be offered 60 and they will feel insulted. They literally project themselves in the future and then decide they're going to be insulted. It's like they live in indignation land where they're perpetually afraid of being insulted by people. It's just sad.
Yeah. So, I mean, when he talked about that role, you could tell he was excited about it. He was so excited about the
opportunity. Being back in the OR. Yeah.
And he genuinely meant it. And it wouldn't have mattered what they offered him, as long as it was, you know, a reasonable amount. And to be in that position, to know that whatever they offer me is fine, but I will love this job. It's a way better place to be than I will hate this job and they're going to pay me a lot.
And if you love your job, you're going to be much better at it. One of my favorite quotes, I've ever learned it in the last 5 years. I read a lot, but this one just shocked me that I hadn't heard it before. When you love doing something, it reveals all of its secrets to you.
Yes.
I just love that because I immediately resonated with my entire life's experience. And you know, I'll just tell you guys, the solution is not more money. It's less spending. And when you suddenly discover that you have enough money that you could walk away from a job for a year because suddenly you realize your boss is unethical, or the company is in danger, or you have a sick child or a sick partner, it may not make you more happy, but it will put you more at peace day to day, week to week, when the world around us surrounds us with reminders that you could be doing better. The advertisers want you to feel greed, want you to feel envy, want you to feel desire to go to the next level, have better shoes or better jeans or a cooler car. I mean, do you know there's a job called, Wendy, do you know this? There's a job called food wrangler. Wrangler, like Wrangler jeans.
Yeah.
And do you know what they do? They have a belt. They wear a belt. And they have different misters with different lotions, different compounds, water and sugar, water and salt, and so on, that they spray on food to make food look good for pictures.
Oh, for advertising. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So even the pictures you see of food in it, though, that looks good.
It's not food.
It's actually not food. It's a picture. and they've designed it to make it look really, really good. And actually stepping back from that and saying, I'm not going to live my life in a perpetual state of envy will help you get comfortable with the money thing.
What's the name of the lady from Entrepreneurs on Fire? She did an M conference speaker.
Entrepreneurs on Fire. No, not Entrepreneurs on Fire. No, I thought it was Finances on, wasn't it Fire? It was it Entrepreneur Friends on Fire?
Friends on Fire.
Fire stands for Financial Independence Retire Early. Yes, and now you've asked me, and I'm completely blanking on her name.
I can't remember either. But she, as part of our M conference, management conference, series of speaker series, we're filling in the period between our plan to do it last year and being able to actually do it in person. And Sarah set up this amazing speaker series where we have, every month, we have one of the speakers come and talk. And they've been brilliant. Maggie?
Yes, Maggie.
Maggie was saying, people ask her how she had been so successful in her career. And she says, one of the reasons is I never had to worry about money. Yes. And so she could do things not worrying, oh, they're going to fire me, or that will put me in a bad position, or whatever.
She told the story of her director.
It was like a freedom.
Her colleagues said, you are quite confident about the things you say. You actually say some things. You disagree with people and they're okay with, you seem okay with it. She says, yes, I simply have no fear because I'm not financially tied to this job. I can actually say what I want. Now, Maggie happens to be an incredibly nice person. She's not like me. And so she's a genuinely kind person. So her definition of being borderline rude is not my definition of borderline rude, but I have to say, how often do we know people who says, well, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to disagree with my boss because he might fire me. Well, Maggie doesn't care about that because she's got, lots of money in the bank.
Yeah.
Not lots. She's not rich.
But enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I had exactly the same thing from Sarah Hartunger, who has a podcast with Laura Vanderkam. She was saying exactly the same thing yesterday. So, I don't know. It's one of those reticular activating things. I keep hearing that.
Yeah, it's so, Maggie Tucker.
Maggie Tucker. I'm sorry I introduced her so badly.
Yeah, we did too. We did terrible. I'm going to hear about that from Maggie. But Maggie will also say, thank you for mentioning Friends on Fire, which I have been on. And they interviewed me about my feelings about money. And I think I surprised them because I said, I don't really care about money. I care about time because I can make more money, but I can't make more time.
More time. No.
Yeah.
So, yeah, being comfortable gives you freedom.
We just gave Maggie and Mike, I know her co-host name's Mike, we gave them a free plug because they earned it. Okay, so summarize for us.
The summary is results and relationships. If nothing else, if you remember three words from this entire cast, results and relationships, all you need to know.
What's my job? What can I do that's most important to get the job done for my boss and for her boss and, for the chain of command? We're not suggesting you become a drone at all. We want you to be creative, get results, and then make sure that you're constantly improving your relationships with others. And the way you do that is you stay in touch with people and talk to them about things that are important to them. And if you do that, your islands will be bigger and nicer. And yes, it's good to be good at personal productivity. Yes, it's good to be good at career transitions, although it's not that hard, and we've got an interview series for you licensees that will allow you to do it. But if you want to go from island to island, your bridges better be strong, and the bridges will be stronger if you have better results and better relationships among the different islands.
All right. Thanks, Matt. That was fun.
Thanks, Wendy. That was a treat. I love doing these. Thanks, everybody. A lot of talk. Hope it helped. Put everything in context for you. We find context very helpful here at Manager Tools. See you next week.